Good evening and welcome to this evening's meeting of the Champaign County Nursing Home Board of Directors. We'll begin this evening's meeting with the roll call.
Hudson, here. Sutton?
Here.
Banks?
Here.
Busey?
Here.
Emanuel?
Here.
Hartke?
Here.
Anderson?
Here. Next, I'll be looking for a motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Moving on to item 4, approval of the minutes of March 13, 2017. Do we have a motion?
So
moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Very good. Public participation. This evening, if you've come here to speak before this board, we ask that you come forward to the table up front. There is a button on there that when you push it down, the light will turn red. Speakers are generally limited to 5 minutes. Do we have anyone who wishes to address the board this evening? Okay, I see no public speakers then. That being the case, we'll move on to communications.
I have one piece of communication I'd like to distribute. A brochure that was developed by the Friends of Champaign County Nursing Home. It's the group that we've talked about that is made up of community supporters of the nursing home who are involved in a fundraising effort on behalf of the home. The first phase of that effort is to develop essentially an employee recognition program where family members or residents or anybody, honestly, can make a contribution to the Friends of Champaign County Nursing Home. And we've worked with the Nursing Home Administration, particularly Amanda and Karen, to develop a program where then that employee who gets named in the recognition will be honored at a regular meeting at the nursing home, and we can put some pictures on the walls of those people who are honored, and it's just a way of developing some funds as our first stage in our fundraising effort. And because he's in the audience, I would just like to thank George Amaya for his contribution for doing all the design and the printing of this. And then there are others who have made contributions already to the Friends of Champaign County Nursing Home. And it, as it says here, and as we've talked about before, the Friends of the Champaign County Nursing Home is a charitable fund organization that provides support and resources to help enhance and maintain quality care for the residents and the patients of Champaign County Nursing Home and supports the board and staff in achieving this care. And this fund is organized through the Community Foundation of East Central Illinois. A couple of the members of that Friends are here in the audience. Belden Fields, was really his initiation that stimulated this. So I just would like you to ask you to share this. There are some in the nursing home. George is helping us put together posters so we can put more in the nursing home. And, you know, you've seen these kinds of programs throughout Carl and Presence. It's a way of letting family members recognize staff. We've actually had family members who have said, I'd really like to recognize staff. I know the staff can't accept gifts, but I'd like to be doing something, and this is their opportunity. That's it.
Yes, thank you, George, too, and all of you on the Friends board that have helped with that. I'd also like to thank the people who worked really, really especially hard on the efforts to support the proposed tax referendum. That includes Matt Heiser, Kyle Patterson, Kyle Kent, Josh Hartke, Kathy Emanuel, Belden Fields, Dottie Vera Weiss, and many, many others who aren't here today. It was so heartwarming and impressive to see not just people my age, but young people, people in their 20s, who gave up their Saturdays and their Sundays every weekend during the campaign, as well as Wednesday evenings, and went door to door and talked to people and made phone calls. And it was just so inspiring to me and heartwarming, and I'm eternally grateful to those individuals. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Any other communications? Very good. We'll move on to the management update. Mr. Jima.
All right. We've got the Medicaid application update. And if you turn to pages 4 and 5 in your packet. So where we are currently, and this has kind of been static for at least the last couple of weeks, we have 45 open applications. Of those, we have actually 19 of the 45 that have been approved that we are awaiting payment. So if they actually would start paying us later this month or by the end of the month, we would be down to 26 open applications. But yes, they are approved, but I still myself consider them open applications because we're not getting paid for yet. And just as a frame of reference, in February we had 48 applications, 44 in March. And the number of approved applications is actually going up. In February, we had 12 approved applications. In March, we had 16. And again, this month, or as of today, it's 19. And the activity that we're seeing from the caseworkers from the hub has basically been non-existent for the last few weeks. You know, the pattern that we've been seeing over the last few months is as we and the county assist in reaching out to our local legislators who in turn reach out to the state, we see some activity for a couple of weeks, then nothing happens. Then Rick will start making more phone calls, and then we'll see some activities, and then we don't see any. So we're in that period now where we don't see any activity. And I probably would summarize that as the state's giving us a little help, and then they, if you want to call it turning the cheek, or moving on to helping other homes or other corporations that are having issues. But it's not a steady addressing of our applications despite all of the efforts that we're taking. So just to give you a dollar estimate, the 19 applications account for roughly about $180,000 in monies that were owed. So it's not a huge number. And the reason why it's 180 is that there's also been a clear pattern of the state approving or seem to be focusing on our more recent applications. So out of those 19 applications, 12 are 80 days or less. And actually, one of the 12 is 80 days, and the remaining 11 are 60 days or less. And we're talking some, a couple of, that are just a handful of days, 1115. So, and again, whether it's by happenstance or not, one of the applications that has been approved actually goes back to 2015, but the resident has to contribute over $3,000 a month in their resident income, whether it's Social Security or pension. So the net amount that Medicaid owes us is only $14,000 going back to 2015. And so when you take a look, so if you look at the chart on page 4, in my opinion, the reduction in applications is a little misleading because what the state is not providing is the dollar amount that's associated with the remaining open applications that haven't been approved. So I think if you took, again, just my opinion, but if you actually took into account the dollars that are owed to facilities across the state or downstate with the Decatur Hub, I think it would be really skewed in terms that the dollar amount is still substantially higher despite the reduction in the number of open applications. But you can see that the Macon County Hub has seen a reduction down to 4,200 applications. But again, you know, we're not seeing that reduction at Champaign County to the same degree that the Hub is seeing. And I just also want to point out that if you take a look at the medical field operations, which is the Chicago hub, they are now starting to see an increase in applications, which we haven't seen before. And you can see that since October of last year, it's kind of a steady increase, although the numbers are still not quite the same as the Macon County hub. And again, just with DeKalb, that gives us a comparison. DeKalb has seen, for them, the highest number of open applications, which is 22, but they've always been under 10 open applications for the last 4 years. So they are even starting to see a backlog of applications.
Scott, could you tell me these 19 approved applications, you mentioned the back amount that's owed. How much on an ongoing basis, just roughly, if you don't have the exact number?
So right now we have a little over 30 of our current residents who have not had approved applications. So that accounts for between $100,000 and $125,000 in monthly cash payments that we're not seeing. If you calculate all of the 45 open applications, it's just under $1 million that we're owed from the state if you put them all together. Am I answering your question?
I'm not sure. I was asking on an ongoing basis. If those start to pay, we'll get a lump amount, and then how much on a monthly basis going forward would that represent?
Okay, so within the 19, I don't recall how many of the 19 are current residents. But okay, out of the 45 applications, there's over 30 residents, current residents, that were not being paid for. So let's say it's 30. The other 15 are no longer in the building. So that 30 represents over $100,000, between $100,000 and $125,000 in monthly cash payments that we are not seeing for those current residents. Okay, we'll move on to staffing and food service, and Karen will speak on those items.
The staffing numbers are on page 6. With the target FTEs being at 62, so there's an error there. We're actually overhired with the CNAs. The struggles that we have currently are with our staff that are changing statuses, going from 12s to 8s. So we're finding ourselves struggling to cover shifts between 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. That seems to be our biggest struggle currently. Our weekend program, based on our current census, we're overhired, and we're looking at reallocating some of those to different days during the week. And then from dietary, again, we're at 19.8, so we're a little under. The target is the 19.65, so we're a little over in that position as well. So we're fully hired based on our current census.
But I also want to point out that over the last couple of months plus, we've been dealing, and especially over the last month, we've been dealing with a higher rate of call-ins on a daily basis. And obviously, the staff with the CNAs is our largest staff, so we're seeing a lot with the CNAs and on the weekends, and also with dietary. So, you know, even though we're showing that we have 69.3 CNAs hired, you know, if we're having a bunch of call-ins, so the additional staff is actually helping us, but we are dealing with issues on a daily basis, trying to get our staff to show up. And again, you know, all the other outside issues out of the nursing home are a contributing factor to that as well. So we're trying to do our best to mitigate this as much as possible.
Karen, I have a question for you. So you talked about the shifts going from 12 to 8. Is that at those?
The shifts, not themselves. The employees have elected to change their shift. And they get to do that one time during the course of the contract.
Okay, so you're seeing some employees going preferring back to go
eights.
To the 8.
Okay. So, Karen, can both nurses and CNAs, they both have the option of selecting either 12 or 8-hour shifts?
Currently, the nurses are all doing the 12s, but that's something they're talking about in their upcoming negotiations, what they'd like to do.
Okay, but the CNAs have the option,
right?
Either one. Thank you.
Right. On page 9, we were able to identify an error during our annual survey. Illinois Department of Public Health didn't enter our staffing numbers correctly in the database, so our numbers have been misrepresented. I was able to verify that with CMS. I had to go back to public health to get them to correct that, so we should see that corrected on our next update.
So that's the issue? No.
No. They told us it could take up to a week, so.
So hopefully in the next quarterly update that'll be published on the CMS website, it'll reflect the new numbers. I'm not sure if it'll actually be reflected next month's update.
We'll get it, but the public won't get
right.
it.
Right. So I'm not sure, because this table comes from the CMS data run that gets updated every month. I'm not sure if the numbers next month will reflect it. But that 1.72 hours, as I put in the narrative, actually should be, and I think it's pretty close, it should be 2.32 hours. And so for what it's worth, Karen did get a very sincere apology for the error, because obviously it was a substantial error in our hours. And so they were going to try to definitely push that through as quickly as possible. So it we'll have to see when it comes out, but it is probable, we think, depending on where the cut points are, that we could see a one-star increase in our staffing. And so then the trickle-down effect may be a one-star increase in our overall rating if that goes up with our staffing.
The next topic is food service, and that's on page 33, I think, where the things that are being addressed. We continue to work with Healthcare Services Group on improving workflow. They have, with the increased census on 1 and 3, they've started utilizing two servers in that area to get the food out quicker. Still working with the staff to make sure the kitchenettes are stocked, that the drinks, the juices, those kinds of things are there, making sure they have all the equipment, the divided plates, so that we're not running back and forth. Looking to make sure we have our napkins available consistently and that we're using them. We've had some food consistency issues with some of our new cooks, and we're continuing to work with them on those kinds of issues. Food temperatures, making sure the plate warmers are plugged in, timely plating of the stay backs, making sure the original plan was for stay backs to originate in the kitchen with a pellet system, and sometimes they're not doing that. They're plating them from the kitchenette and just putting them on a plate, which is not going to hold temperature. So we get right back to issues with hall trays. So really working with the staff on that, trying to get back to getting the meal tickets out to our residents so they can, you know, make sure they, if they don't want what we're serving, they can order something else, not we serve whatever the entree is and we take it to them and they tell us then that they want something else. You know, let's get it right the first time, not be wasting everybody's time. Cleanliness of the dining rooms continues to be a focus, making sure everything's cleaned up, everything's wiped down, things are stocked. And we've had a big improvement with our Matrix software, speaking to their menu, because Matrix bought their menu system software. So now when a diet order is put into our EHR, it goes directly to there. So there's no lag time in diet orders being processed. Before, they had to do it on paper, get it to dietary. So that's been a big improvement. Any questions on dietary?
Can I go back to staffing for just a second? So if and I realize it's an if the staffing were corrected and you get from 3 to 4 stars, which is where we had been,
mm-hmm.
and if you get to overall rating then of 2 stars, which again is where we had been up until this mm-hmm. Miscalculation, there was some confusion about the home being at substandard quality based on these star ratings. And you have on page 14, just to make it clear to everybody, that if we revert, right now we're not at substandard, we're not, clearly there are things we want to improve. but we're at pretty much the level of the other nursing homes. If we get back to where we had been up until this last error, we would be, not only would we not be substandard, but there'd only be Clark Lindsay and one other home higher than us. So I just want to make sure that we clarify that. I really think there's confusion about how we compare to other nursing homes in town. And when you look at these star ratings, while one star is not what anybody wants, it's what most people have. And we had typically had two stars until we had this error in the nursing number. Is that correct? Am I reading that correctly?
Yes, you are.
Okay, thanks.
And Kathy, just to follow up on that, if you took a look at page 32, which is the quality measures, so these measures had not been updated by CMS for, I think, the last two quarters because they've had a technical glitch in their system. So this is the first update that we've had for a couple of quarters. So the one that we had been looking at, the total points, if you take a look at the bottom of the table, it says 915 points. I know it's kind of hard to read. So in the previous quality measures, we were at 815 points. So the total point accumulation has increased. And the cut point to get us back to four stars of quality measures right now is 970 points, 970. So we're getting close to getting back to four stars. and so some of the new measures in...
The only other four star quality is Clark Lindsay.
Right.
Yes.
Yep. So again, I won't go through them all, but on page 31, I summarize which of the quality measures in that table saw increases and which saw decrease. So obviously, overall, we've had more measures increase or improve than we've seen decrease. And the one thing I wanted to point out that I do have written on page 31 is that one of the measures that decreased were residents who were physically restrained. We do not have any residents at any point in the last year, probably the last two-plus years, because Karen has worked really hard to remove any restraints, because basically restraints are not allowed within the facility. So there's a reporting error that they're trying to get corrected, because the data for the second quarter of 2016, which was it 1.3% or... But anyway, whatever the number was that was in there, it actually should be zero. And so we were docked points where we shouldn't have been docked points. But based on my calculation, even with that correction, we wouldn't get enough points to get us to a four-star, but it would get us that much closer.
Scott, any... changes in the finances that you want to bring to our attention in addition to what's already provided in the package?
Just keep in mind, obviously, you know, the financial statements are always, they have to be behind because, you know, it's physically impossible for us to get March's statements ready in time for the board meeting. So we're always basically a month behind. So the key thing to keep in mind is that, you know, the census is now down to 147. We've got 8 Medicare. But what we've seen, so we're doing everything we can to reduce our expenses in line with the changes in census and revenue. So over the last 3 payrolls, I think maybe going into the 4th payroll, our average payroll has dropped by about $20,000 per payroll. So obviously in a 2 payroll month, that's $40,000. So obviously that's helped our cash situation. And that was done. Those savings are being seen before we've completed the consolidation, moving of our residents off of Unit 2. So we should see some additional cost savings. And I'm guessing maybe $10,000 a payroll max, if I'm lucky. Because it's hard to determine because you've got overtime that we're reducing. But then again, you also have taken the fact that we've had additional amount of call-ins, so maybe overtime doesn't decrease as much, you know, factors like that. And we're doing as much as we can on the on the non-labor costs to get them reduced. So at this point, I can't guess at what March's financials will be. We'll just have to wait and see. But if you take a look at what we had for February, on a cash basis, we did squeak out a little bit of, on paper, of positive cash flow. But again, we've got 30 or so residents that we're not getting paid for. So on an actual basis, we're probably about $75,000 in cash loss on a monthly basis because of the Medicaid residents that we are not being paid for.
Any other questions of Mr. Gima? Mr. Schneider.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at the separations and admissions, is it fair to say that there's more challenges right now with a lower number of admissions than our separations?
Definitely. And I shouldn't say that there's always a certain percentage of the inquiries that we get that are ones that we cannot accept. Either they don't have a payer source or they have medical or psychosocial issues that makes it very difficult for us to take care of them.
And age.
So, if it's a younger age individual, we're going to take, a lot of times we won't take them because they won't fit within our resident population. So, yes, we have seen a decrease in referrals. I mean, the hospitals are still referring, but, again, the issue becomes the families or the residents ask, what's happening with the nursing home, and they decide to go elsewhere instead of dealing with the uncertainty of Champaign County. That being said, we've just had a Medicare referral this week, and our Medicare is at 8, so it's not where we want it to be. And the good news is right now no one's coming off this week off of Medicare, so at least for the next week or so we'll maintain our Medicare census. So again, Medicare just fluctuates so much because it's short-term rehab for the most part. So, but we're doing as much as we can to get the referrals in as much as possible.
Okay, if there's no further questions of Mr. Gima, we'll move on to item number 8, items for board approval. Item A, proposal for consolidation, the note being this is to be distributed. Mr. Schneider, I think we'll be leading this discussion.
Actually, I think we might have had a miscommunication. This is in reference to the wing consolidation, because that's actually proceeding already. So I don't know, Scott, if you want to give us an update on that.
So when our census about roughly 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, roughly about 4 weeks ago, when our census hit about 152, I mean, that gave us enough available beds where we could start consolidating residents off of one of our units, which is Unit 2, to the rest of the building, which is Units 1, 3, 4, and 5. Predominantly though with units 1 and 3. So and we had done this before when we did our Medicare rehab unit, and so the plan that we put into place is on a weekly basis we move 4 residents at a time, basically in 2 sets during the week. And so as of this week, we are down to 8 residents that we're moving this week, and we'll have everyone moved by the end of this week if everything goes smoothly. So, yeah, we haven't had any problems or any issues with the moves. And our hope is, because we have a lot of beds available on Unit 4, and so if we can get our referrals up, we do have available beds on Unit 4 that we will put them on first before putting them back on Unit 2, and that will help keep our staffing, any staffing changes, to a minimum by doing that. But right now, we still have available beds on the other units if necessary. So we do have a lot of flexibility if we have the good problem of being able to take on additional inquiries or admits. So I think we've got it set up perfectly to control our costs at this point and give us the flexibility to take on new admissions if necessary with minimal increase in staffing levels. And again, with this move, there has not been any layoffs at all. So it allows us to redistribute the staff predominantly nurses and CNAs to the other units. And again, our target for the other units is actually to increase our workload. So traditionally, our CNAs, we were looking at a target of 10 residents per CNA on day shift. We're looking to try to get that reduced where a CNA is taking care of 8 residents. So that'll help improve the care that we're giving to our staff on those remaining units.
Okay, very good. So the consolidation is actually driven by the census. And we're taking advantage of that, if you will, by maximizing our efficiency and improving the quality of care by having additional staff available on a ratio basis to our residents. So, excellent. Are there any questions with regard to the consolidation as described? Fert? Yes.
Are there any benefits facility-wise with being able to close down that unit?
You can correct me if I'm wrong, Karen, but I think one of the big benefits is that because it frees up one of our dining rooms, that it gives us more available space for activities, because that's one of the things that activities really couldn't start until the dining rooms were cleaned up. So by opening up the unit to dining room, it really helps with activities. But there's, as we went through the plan for the consolidation, there was a unanimous agreement by all the managers that this was going to help improve the quality of care unto the residents from all the departments. So I think as an example, that's probably the biggest one. I'm maybe missing. Are there other examples? Yeah.
Okay, very good. We'll then move on to new business under item 9. I had suggested this be placed on this evening's agenda, and it's more for discussion. And I wanted the board members to have their input in this, and maybe we can come up with a direction. And what drove this was Mr. Aldrich's report that he provided us on our options, dated February of this year. There was on page 10, and I'll read this one paragraph as a refresher. He writes, the heading is recommended strategy for the future. And remember, we didn't know what the future would be when this was written because we were awaiting the results of the election. Now that has occurred, we know what those results are. So recommended strategy for the future, he wrote. I would respectfully recommend the Champaign County Administrator and the Champaign County Board of Directors consider and adopt an option that would provide a more stable and successful future for the Champaign County Nursing Home. I envision a joint venture between Carl Foundation Hospital, Carl Clinic, Health Alliance, Presence Covenant Medical Center, Christie Clinic, and the Champaign County that would jointly create a new not-for-profit corporation to sponsor the Champaign County Nursing Home with certain reserve powers relating to the nursing home to be retained by Champaign County. The new sponsoring entity would require some level of incremental investment by all the sponsors so that they all had skin in the game. Based upon that recommendation, I know that the county board is going to be looking on what it's going to do. And I felt maybe we could offer the services from this board to reach out to these entities and find out if they would be interested in such an arrangement. And my thinking is the county board is going to be having its discussions, and this is something that's lingering out there. Well, what about the nonprofit option? And I think we need to answer that on behalf of the county board so that they can make their decision with that knowledge. I'm not sure how we would form this committee. I don't think we want a committee that involves agendas and public meetings and all that. I'm thinking something smaller. kind of an exploratory group where two members from this board and potentially staff, county staff, arrange for meetings with these entities, letters of introduction of the purpose of the meeting, and then have these meetings with them and discuss their interest, if any, or to what extent they would have an interest and how they might want to see something like this form that they'd be willing to be involved with. This board's charge is to make sure the nursing home's successful. And this is one venture I think that we need to explore. If it's viable and there are partners who want to participate and put skin in the game, then I think we need to find out who they are and how that might look. So having said all that, I would like to hear any input that the board members might have. And if you would have an interest in participating in this group that would go out and meet with these potential partners, let us know, and we'll see if we can't form this up and then come up with some final document that we can later present to the county board. So I leave it like that for now and allow for some open discussion in public. If you think it's a bad idea, let me know. If you think it's worth pursuing, let me know.
Jack?
Yes.
As I recall, when this was first presented to us, there were some questions about legal aspects of how the county could be involved in a partnership or whatever this entity was. Is that clarified at this point, or is that still, totally unknown?
I had a chance to talk with the state's attorney's office about this. I think that this is very much similar to one of the strategic options we had considered originally, which was to lease the building and form a partnership with a company to manage it. The kind of partnership that Mr. Aldrich talked about would involve the county joining with some other entities. So I think that the way that the statutes are written and limits on our authority, I think it'd be very difficult to pursue a public-private partnership of that type right now. However, now that we have the authority from the voters to consider a transfer as an alternative in terms of disposition for the nursing home, I think that that's something that could be considered as a possibility. So we wouldn't necessarily be entering into this directly, but we would seek out someone who would take over the home, essentially, or purchase it from us. It could be a not-for-profit that's already in existence. It might be one that would need to be put together. But that's how I see this working.
Right. I certainly think it's worth exploring, and the only way to get to some of these questions that we're talking about is to kind of bring a group of people together to really articulate options and explore, what kind of sense those options make. I think focusing with certainly Carl and the other entities mentioned, they certainly, I would think, have an interest in at least talking about, what would it look like, because, what we do here helps fulfill some of the needs that those entities have. So I think who's on that committee would make a difference. Certainly having someone who has some expertise on the medical side, the nursing home side, the care side of what we do here would be really important, because I think one of the keys is asking the right questions. So, and I don't know if that, I think it would be willing to explore not only who's from our group would be on there, but maybe the expertise from the outside community person, someone or someone's who can who can help us know what questions to ask and try to put something like that together. So I guess, you know, I guess what I'm saying is I think it's worth it. I think it's also worth saying who are the people who need to really be at the table exploring and asking the questions here. And there may be some people in addition outside who would be good, I don't know what you would call them, advisory to the advisory board or whatever, but bringing those people to the table. So,
yeah, just to follow up, I think the chair's already suggested this, but I also agree that maybe it may be more expeditious to consider doing this more informally rather than going into a formal committee structure. I think a lot of discussions can happen directly with the right people involved. So I think some of the people are sitting here tonight.
I wonder if maybe has the specific recommendation that the chair read to us earlier, which was in the report, been presented to the state's attorney under the jurisdiction that we now have with the vote that was approved by the voters this week to say, is this an option that we now potentially have? Is there any case law out there that might give us the ability to do what this recommendation says? And I'm not sure, but I think that's a question that we might really want the state's attorney to answer so that we know for sure whether or not we can do it as constructed there rather than as actually, you know, selling or leasing the home, which assumes that the county board or the county would maintain it but establish this 501c3 partnership. And so is that a question that perhaps we could agree that we would like to ask the administrator to put to the state's attorney so that we know whether or not we can pursue what's recommended there?
I think that's an excellent question, and I would ask that staff go ahead and ask the Attorney General. Or state's attorney's office.
Yeah, I agree with that because I think before we move forward with approaching Carl or and groups like that, we need to make sure that it's legally feasible. There's going to be a lot of issues with. I know the exploit we've explored leasing before, and that wasn't really feasible. You know, there's going to be issues with how long the taxes continue to be collected because we still have to pay off the bond referendum no matter what happens. So let's find out whether these plans are legal before we do that. Secondly, maybe I'm the naysayer, and I'm all for us exploring every option. Don't get me wrong here, but I think that it's extraordinarily hard for me to believe that we are going to find a non-for-profit who's going to pay us $12 million for that building and take it over and form it and do something that does what the current nursing home does. Looking at the business model that I think it would be hard for a private company to make even a profit out of, the idea that a non-for-profit could come in, not have the tax referendum, or any, even the three and a half cents that we do collect, and still somehow provide the same level of care. And none of these groups have shown up yet. So, you know, if it's legal, and we form this group to start asking, let's find out. Because if this is a pipe dream, and I'm concerned that it is, we need to start addressing things as a board and how we're going to deal with it without that, because I don't really think it's going to happen.
Well, I think this is a great idea. I would recommend that we consider sort of expanding it, because I think as an advisory board, given the results of the election, we're faced with what are our options, because while we have the option now to consider sale, it's not a mandate, and depending on how the county board votes, we don't know what, it's not a requirement. We have the option, but it doesn't have to happen. So I'm thinking that if there would be a decision not to sell, the county board would not vote to sell despite the referendum, then we are faced with, what do we do? So I feel like, as the advisory board, we should be in a non-political situation trying to look at what are our real options now and making some recommendations to the county board. We did that once. That's not where we really ended up. We made the recommendation about the increase in the referendum. That's not what we got. So now we really ought to explore this, I think, as one good option, and then make a look at what else. I guess I just wouldn't want it to be limited to this option. But I think this is absolutely what we should be looking at as a possibility. And I you know, there are so many. I think finding out what's possible would be good, but there are numerous ways to structure joint ventures. So if we could not only find out if this is possible, but if not, what the barriers are, so we could figure out how we might work with those barriers to still get the same end result.
Right.
I think that's a great idea.
Thank you. Well, if I'm hearing this correct, and I'm sure I am, I guess what worries me is I don't want us to pause too long on this. If we're going to ask the state's attorney's office for an opinion, that will take its time, whatever that time is. But if they're able to come back in a week or two, we don't meet again for another month. And then we can't make any, we're not doing anything in the interim for that 2 weeks. If it took 2 weeks and we're not doing anything for 2 weeks and we have to meet again and say, at this point, this is what the state's attorney's office said. Now let's form this group and now go out and meet with these people. Maybe it's just a delay of 2 weeks. Maybe that's how I should look at it. I just want us to move forward because my concern is the finances of the nursing home and its impact on the quality of care. Now, we've actually seen kind of a switch in that, which is positive because of the nursing increases, because of the consolidation that's going on. But I don't know if we can expect that to maintain itself. Maybe the answer is to wait, but and let the county board continue knowing that we're doing this on the side, but just my thoughts.
I didn't, what makes you say, I didn't hear, let's wait.
Yeah.
I didn't hear anybody say, let's wait.
It was my, I interpreted it wrong. When I heard reference to the state's attorney's office, it was like we were going to wait to see if we could even do this. If that's not the case, then great. But I expressed my concern, I guess, through my misunderstanding of.
Well, I think if we can get an understanding from the state's attorney of what it is that we can do in terms of a joint venture or some sort of structure, as soon as the state's attorney can provide that information and they can provide it to you, you can share it with the rest of the board. We can all start to think about then what is the best structure for us now to move forward with this and who do we talk to next and how do we keep this moving. But I think we need to know and understand, as was stated earlier, if we're going to Carl, what are we asking them to do? And I don't think we know that until we know what we legally can enter into.
Well, I agree with that. But honestly, from a practical standpoint, if you're trying to get on the calendar, administrative person, either Carl or Covenant, we'd have to call yesterday for it to happen in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So I think making somebody aware that we want to talk with them and trying to get ready and then not actually having the conversation. Because if we wait till we've got, I agree with you, if we wait till we've got the answers and then say, okay, let's start approaching people. First, we need to figure out who we need to approach and get on the calendars, figure out who is going to approach them, and then we've got to get our message before we actually do approach them. But I think you could start doing some of the, you know, housekeeping work.
Well, based on that, maybe... Yeah, based on that comment, maybe perhaps what we could do is identify who wants to participate in that off of this board, and they can start working with staff on some of the preliminary contacts that we need to make pending the state's attorney's response. And then once we get that, we're already in the queue to start meeting with people. Even if we had to reschedule, that'd be one thing. Yeah, I'm not in a rush. I guess I am in a rush because I recognize the only reason we're discussing these things is time has been such that we've, you know, the nursing home's lost a lot of money and continues every day that goes by. So the quicker we can resolve that and stop that, the better for the entire community and for the nursing home, of course. So I guess at this point... I'll let Mary speak here, but I'm thinking we'll see if who might be interested in being on this group, or I don't know what else to call it, a committee, but it's not a study group. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if Kathy's schedule allows for it, but I think she's the one with the best contacts with Carl and Covenant, and would be the best position to chair this committee if her time schedule allows it.
And I don't know your exact position, that if you still have affiliation with one of these entities and whether there'd be a conflict, and maybe you could address that.
I'm retired, but I do contractual work at this point, still for Covenant to some extent. I don't know that that would create a conflict in terms of what you've outlined here. If I were asking them for something else, it might.
I don't see how that creates a conflict for you to just start opening bridges here. I mean, we're talking about trying to, who are going to be the players, who would be interested from these various players in being involved in this. Somebody who knows these folks would be the best person to reach out to see if they have interest, because we're just opening up initial forays into communication here, because we're going to have decisions from the state's attorney about what we legally can do. We're going to have offers from them, what they're willing to do. And then we're going to have to come back to this board and see if any of that can be melded together into something that's going to work. So, yes, we should start opening these doors now, and I don't see a conflict. In fact, I see hopefully an advantage in that. So, yeah, please, Kathy, start reaching out.
Yeah, I think Kathy's well qualified to be on the study group. But I have to raise the question of the conflict. I'm not looking for it, and maybe that's something that could be addressed with the state's attorney's office to ensure, because even on my short time here on with the county on the county board, we had an instance where somebody had a conflict because their family was involved with nursing homes and whether or not they could be on this advisory board. And nobody on its surface felt there was a conflict. Turned out there was. So maybe the legal experts are best to advise us in that regard. But I hope that they find it's not a conflict. Okay. Well, I guess what we'll expect from this discussion then is the identification of two board members who might be interested in participating in this. And I'm willing to consider being a participant in this, but that doesn't mean I'm wanting the position and no one else can have it. I'm just voicing that as I'm speaking. Does anyone else wish to participate in this? Mr. Schneider.
I was going to say that I'm more than happy to work with the nursing home board on this, although I think from my personal standpoint, I think there are people in the community that may have better relationships than I do with both of the healthcare providers, and some of you probably know who those people are, so I would ask that you think about that, and maybe there are others that are not here tonight that might be appropriate to bring in the discussion.
I imagine. Oh, sorry. I don't know how much this work, there will be as far as the work and what it will entail. But I imagine we'll see it take form and shape and reach the end goal. So.
If there turns out not to be a conflict, I'd be happy to.
Thank you very much.
I'm not unwilling to help, but I don't think I have the skill set for this job. But I would suggest that Kathy be given some authority to approach some individuals to work with her, and they may be people on this board, they may be people on the county board, they may be staff, they may be someone like Dottie Vera Weiss, who is a physician who has, you know, helped us with our campaign. I mean, I think perhaps we could give her some freedom to approach other individuals to work with her.
Good suggestion. Not hearing anything else, then, at this point, the early stage, it'll be Kathy Emanuel and I, and we'll get together with Rick, and we'll start hammering this out. And we'll see what we're able to come up with. Any suggestions or well wishes? No, I'm kidding. Okay. If there's no other comments on that item, yes.
I think you can really only deal with two people from the board at a time. But certainly, as you're working through this, I would be willing to step in and help at any time if there are meetings that are going and if there's a need for someone else to be, you know, participating. I'm perfectly happy to do that. So,
thank you. And I could see occasion where your expertise, which is vast, where I would simply say I'm not going to attend this one because of your expertise is better placed in the room than mine, and I would certainly take advantage of that, what you're able to offer. So thank you. And, of course, Mr. Banks. It all depends where we're at in the process and who we're meeting. Okay. If there's no further comments on that item, then we'll move on to other business. Item 10, approval of closed session minutes of March 13, 2017, and those would have been passed out earlier in the meeting, and I have an indication that everyone has reviewed it. Can we have a motion on this? We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? It carries. Our next meeting, date and time, will be Monday, May 8th at 6 p.m. We're going to move on to item 12, which is a closed session, but I wanted to make a comment because I saw some people had walked in. I wasn't paying real close attention after the meeting had started and we had already gone by public participation that tomorrow evening the county board, the committee of the whole, will be meeting in this room at 6:30. And if you wish to speak publicly with regards to the nursing home, that would be an opportunity for you to do so. So at this time, I would ask Mr. Harkey.
Chairman, I move that we enter an executive session pursuant to 5 ILCS 120/2C1 to consider the employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of a specific employee of Champaign County and pursuant to 5 ILCS 120/2C17, the recruitment, credentialing, discipline, or formal peer review of physicians or other healthcare professionals, or for the discussion of matters protected under the Federal Patient Safety and Quality Improvement Act of 2005 and the regulations promulgated thereunder, including 42 CFR Part 3, 73 FR 70732, or the Federal Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996, and the regulations promulgated thereunder, including 45 CFR Parts 160, 162, and 164, by a hospital or other institution providing medical care that is operated by the public body. I further move that the following individuals remain present. VP of MPA Scott Gima, HR Director Amanda Bloomfield, County Administrator Rick Snyder, Recording Secretary Tammy Asplund, and Director of Admissions Josh Drake, and I so move all of that.
We have a motion, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? We'll need a roll call. Thank you. You're right.
I would like to amend my motion to also include Karen Nofke, please.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Okay, we'll move into the, yes, sir.
Okay. So we'll just need a second to get our, set up for this. Tammy's going to take care of the, getting the reporting
Very good.
Stopped.
We'll take a moment. I think the reporters want to reach out.